From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine.
You've heard the stories, right? Somebody creates a product and suddenly it's being used by all the cool celebrities and all the cool spaces. And you're like, how did that happen? How did they build this thing and get it into the most visible and exciting hands? Because that stuff can really matter. If a celebrity is genuinely wearing and loving something, not just obviously promoting it in exchange for money, but genuinely wearing and loving it, then people take notice. It's hard to find better marketing than that. Now, let me introduce you to a guy who's done this really, really well. So well, in fact, that sometimes he just turns on the TV and sees the greatest athletes in the world wearing his product.
Like, I was watching the Open Championship this past weekend, and I got to see Rory McIlroy wearing a whoop strap on the golf course because it just turns out he's a user of the product.
That is Will Ahmed. He's founder and CEO of a company called Whoop, and that's W-H-O-O-P, Whoop. He describes it as wearable technology that optimizes human performance, which is to say it's like a really high-quality wearable fitness tracker. So anyway, that's the word you might have heard and not understood a second ago when he said it. He turned on the TV, saw one of the greatest golfers in the world wearing Whoop, and he was like, hey, pretty great. And again, the question is, how does that happen? I mean, in the case of Rory McIlroy, the answer was actually chronicled on golf.com, though you're going to find it a little frustrating to hear. Can I just read a little bit from this article? The headline is, the Whoop 3.0 strap helps pros grind it out without running out of gas and can help you score better. Which, okay, first of all, how much does that headline sound like an advertisement? But it's apparently not, which is the power of getting products into the hands of pros like this. Suddenly everybody wants to know, what does this celebrity know that I don't? So, okay, here is how the story opens. And, just to get us in the mood, I'm going to transport us to a driving range. Yes. Feeling golfy? Okay, here's from the story. In the midst of preparing for the Memorial Tournament earlier this year, Rory McIlroy spied Scott Stallings on the practice green and made a beeline for him just before teeing off. He had a question only Stallings could answer. When you swing, does it ever get in the way? McIlroy asked, pointing to the strap fastened to his right wrist. Professional golfers are used to trying out the latest high-tech training aids in the name of job security and major championship hardware, but the band in question on McIlroy's wrist isn't designed to boost clubhead speed or extra yards off the tee. It's all about having enough juice in the tank to perform at the highest level possible for 72 holes. In an era where athletes are more aware of their bodies and how they perform and recover than ever before, Boston-based Whoop is at the forefront of a seismic shift in the sports world. And scene. So that didn't really help us answer the question, right? How did Rory McIlroy get Whoop? Seems because he saw another professional golfer using Whoop. So again, finally, the question. How does this happen? This is what I wanted to know from Will, the founder of Whoop. So I asked him, and he had some really useful tips, which is exactly what we are going to share right after the break. This podcast is brought to you by ClearBank. ClearBank is changing the way that entrepreneurs raise money with equity-free capital. The company was co-founded by Michelle Romano. She's a star on Dragon's Den, the Canadian version of Shark Tank, and she created it with her partner Andrew D'Souza after seeing how many companies were willing to part with precious equity in exchange for a bigger marketing budget. ClearBank believes that founders shouldn't give up a piece of their company to fund marketing and inventory expenses, which is why it makes equity-free investments ranging from $10,000 to $10 million and can get you a term sheet in less than 20 minutes. They charge a small flat fee for the capital and you pay them back using a win-win rev share. ClearBank wants to be clear, this is not a loan. There is no interest rate, no personal guarantees, no credit checks, no financial covenants. In 2018, it invested $150 million, and it is on track to do $1 billion this year. So, if you were doing over $10,000 a month in revenue, find out how you can receive ClearBank Capital by getting your 20-minute term sheet at clearbank.com/problem solvers. That's ClearBank, B-A-N-C, .com/problem solvers. ClearBank, stop pitching and get back to doing what you love, growing your business. And now our second sponsor. You know that business is hard, that anything can be hard, and that solutions come by learning from the smartest, wisest people. It's why you listen to this podcast, and that is also what you get when you sign up for Masterclass. Masterclass offers exclusive access to online courses taught by masters of their craft. Learn business leadership from Howard Schultz, economics from Paul Krugman, writing from Malcolm Gladwell, and dozens more. I really love the advice in the Gladwell session. He offers very, very valuable wisdom. Like, one of my favorites is that he says, you should be able to write at an eighth grade level, but with ideas that are super sophisticated. Man, I wish someone had told me that at the beginning of my writing career. I spent so much time trying to impress people with my wordsmithing rather than with my ideas. You know, writing is about communication, not about showing off. This is the kind of clarity you find with Masterclass. And now you can have unlimited access to every Masterclass. And as a Problem Solvers listener, you get $30 off. Just go to masterclass.com/problemsolvers for $30 off your first year of the All Access Pass. That's masterclass.com/problemsolvers for unlimited access to Masterclass at $30 off. masterclass.com/problemsolvers. So our question of the day, how do you get your product into the hands of influential people? This was the first question I posed to Will, and I want to apologize up front for the audio quality here. Will and I actually sat down for an Instagram live session, so what you'll be hearing throughout this episode is actually audio from that. It's a little echoey because we were just sitting in my office being recorded on an iPhone, but after we talked, I just felt like this stuff is too good to disappear after 24 hours on Instagram. We've got to get this on a Problem Solvers episode. And, one of Will's first customers was LeBron James, so that's worth knowing. And that is how I began.
How do you get your product into the hands of LeBron James?
Well, I think the interesting thing very early on for us at Whoop was that we were trying to introduce recovery to the market, and that was something that didn't exist previously. And it turns out that the top 1% of the 1% of the 1% are actually willing to take risks on things that they find cool. But
Wait, can I just pause on that? Because you wouldn't expect that, right? You would expect that the top people are inundated with stuff and super skeptical and probably only use something that was created by a friend or something like that. But you're saying that's not true?
Well, I think that's part true. But the other half to this is that you have to find the person who's closest to the person you want to get to that people don't necessarily know. So in the case of LeBron James, in the case of Michael Phelps, you probably know who their coach is, you know who their agent is, you know who their wife is. But
and if you know who that those people are, everyone knows who those people
exactly
are.
Right. But the interesting thing that we found was that the personal trainer of these super high-end athletes was less well-known.
Ooh, good starting point right there. Any celebrity will be surrounded by two sets of people. The first set is well-known. So, you know, if you want to reach Oprah, do not go to Gayle King. Too obvious. But then there are all these other people, the unknown influencers to the influencers. And nobody is barraging them. They're just out in the world. So how do you reach out to them? Here's how Will got an intro to this guy, Mike, who's LeBron James's trainer.
Well, I met them at an event.
And was, okay.
You know, because there's all these different sports events and,
right.
And personal trainers are more willing to go to them. And
right.
I was fortunate to meet Mike there, for example. And so I gave him a pitch for the technology. He starts trying it. And then because he liked it, he was able to put it on LeBron. And the same thing happened with Michael Phelps. And so I guess the lesson for other entrepreneurs is if you can identify a very important person in someone's life who's potentially underrated at that moment in time.
But very trusted.
Yeah, but very trusted.
Right.
There's an optimization to be had.
It's important that Will didn't just meet this guy on, like, the street, you know? He didn't spot LeBron James's trainer at a Whole Foods and said, oh my God, dude, try my product. Instead, he went to an environment where he and this trainer would be seen as peers. They were both in the fitness space. They both had shared goals and enough of a shared community that they were at an event together. And at that point, one layer of trust had already been established. But is that the only way to do it? Will says, no, you could start cold. You could start with a cold email, in fact.
I'm a big fan of the cold email. Like, I send a ton of cold emails even still today. I think that there's an art to a cold email. It needs to be short. It needs to be punchy. It needs to be the point. Actually, I was interviewed on Charlie Rose. I know Charlie's a little out of fashion, but when I was interviewed on it, it was a big deal. And I remember it was because I sent him a cold email.
Really?
Yeah.
It worked.
And so there's a lot of people out there who are willing to accept cold emails. I actually respond to a lot of cold emails because I'm someone who sends them. So I feel like you got to have good karma in that regard.
I'm the same way, actually. I have sent so many cold emails throughout my career, and some of them have actually paid off. When I was a struggling young journalist at the beginning of my career, I sat in my bedroom in central Massachusetts sending cold emails to editor after editor after editor, like sharing ideas for stories that I hoped they'd pay attention to. And some did. One of them was an editor at the Washington Post health section, and I ended up writing a whole bunch of stories for her. And really, a few years later, those stories were what got me a job at Men's Health, which enabled me to move to New York. And that job led to a job at Fast Company, where I learned business journalism, which is ultimately how I became suited for the job I have now. So you could say I'm speaking to you right now because of a cold email I sent in, I don't know, 2004. But let's dive a little deeper into that. What makes a good cold email?
So I think the magic with the cold email is you don't want to be saying a bunch of things like, hey, John, I hope you're having a great day. I'm writing this from like as few words as possible to cut to the ultimate point. And you want the first two or three sentences to be super catchy. So I think like the first sentence or two that I sent to Charlie Rose was like, hey, Charlie, we just closed a landmark deal, and I want you to be the first to know. Like, okay, that's something that,
that's nice. Yeah.
That's something at least that a high-end reporter would be interested in, right?
Right.
And so that gets them to the second sentence.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I'm a big fan. Okay, maybe the person's not going to keep reading.
Right.
Right? So right.
You got to get that a lot for what it's worth. And
I bet you do.
Always assume it's a lie. Always.
Right. That's the other thing. You want to be pretty authentic, too.
Yeah.
I think if you say a bunch of sentences that seem fluffy, it makes you even less likable or less likable.
Right.
The other thing is you want your cold email to be in a normal email format because then it looks like other emails that people normally get.
Right.
When I get an email that's got some large things here and weird bullets and certain things bolded, I immediately hit spam or delete because I assume it's a telemarketer or whatever.
And I'll add another tip. Be very clear on the value that you can provide the person you're reaching out to. Most of the cold emails that I get do not do that. Like, okay, you want to see something from my inbox? Here is an actual cold email I recently received. I'm going to abbreviate it a bit and make it anonymous, but otherwise, word for word. And I don't know, should we go back to the driving range? Let's go back to the driving range. Here we are. Greetings. I would like to start off by saying I love reading articles on your site. Okay, side note there, how much do you want to bet that this person has never read a story on entrepreneur.com? It sure sounds like it based on how generic that was. Okay, more email. I'm blank, and I'm launching a new snack called blank. It was developed in collaboration with blah, blah, blah. Anyway, a few sentences about the new snack. And then, we're searching for publications that can possibly get the word out about our new product, and we think you're a perfect match. We want you to experience firsthand just how delicious blank is so that you are open for a collaboration. We would love to send you a sample for our product. And it goes on from there. But do you see what's going on there? This person was focused entirely on value for him. He literally told me, we want a publication that can get the word out about our product. And it's like, okay, cool, dude, but I'm not a service provider. That's not my job. I am not here to help you. I'm here to serve my reader with valuable information for them. And if you are not telling me how your story can be valuable to my reader, you're only telling me how I can be valuable to you. You're not telling me how you can be valuable to me. Doesn't work like that. Focus on value. When you're emailing someone cold, be relentless, relentlessly focused on value. So, all right, back to Will and Whoop. Let's say you've succeeded here. You've gotten your product into a celebrity's hands. Now I wanted to know, how much of a victory is that for the company?
Well, it was a huge win for, I think, the team.
Sure.
The Whoop team, right?
Right.
And at that point, we're probably 5 or 10 people, right? So we're tiny. I mean, Whoop today is about 70 employees, so we're bigger today and more established, and we raised more capital and all these things. But at that time, you're sort of looking for all these little bits of validation to tell yourself to keep pushing forwards. And for us to have, I think, really elite athletes using the technology, accepting even some bugs with it, like the early generation products that some of these high-end athletes were using had 18-hour battery lives, and they would disconnect from the phone a lot and all sorts of things. Whereas Whoop today, 5-hour battery life, permanent connection, the scores come very quickly. It's a streamlined experience.
Mm-hmm.
So for us to be able to see that these really interesting elite people were getting value, even though there were elements of it that were a little buggy or a little off, it gives you that little bit of wind at your back to say, okay, let's keep going, let's keep going.
Which sounds great, but honestly, that was not the answer I expected. I thought that getting a product into LeBron James's hands would immediately lead to booming sales. But instead, Will saw it as internal validation. It strengthened his team. But is there a way to actually capitalize on this? As I was talking to Will about this, I thought about my friend Kevin, who started a company called Painting Lounge. It's one of those paint and sip studios. You come in for a painting lesson and drink wine while you do it. He's got a couple studios in New York City, and it's a lot of fun. And celebrities make a semi-regular appearance. Like, they just show up as students. Not long ago, one of the actresses from Game of Thrones showed up with her boyfriend to take a class, which I thought was really cool. And Kevin always wonders, is there a way to capitalize on this without seeming to violate the privacy of his customers? He doesn't know, so he hasn't really done anything with these celebrity appearances. They just come and go. But I wondered what Will has done. How did he take advantage of having LeBron and Michael Phelps use his products?
Well, one thing it does is it cuts through a lot of filters, right? When you have if you're starting a food company, you have the top chef, if you're starting a sports company, you have the top athlete, if you're starting to fill in the blank, you get these top people.
Yeah.
It cuts through the noise pretty quickly because it immediately validates you in like a 15-second pitch. Mm-hmm. And so it got us access to a lot of things. Like we got meetings with the leagues, we got meetings with teams, we got meetings with investors that perhaps otherwise we wouldn't have gotten.
Yeah.
Because the technology had been used by such interesting people. And, you know, then from there, you got to keep in mind, the technology still has to deliver, right, folks? Like people have to enjoy wearing this thing. Otherwise, who cares if someone put it on for 12 seconds? So at the end of the day, the product has to deliver. But I think the point here, Jason, is like, how do you get into some of these doors, right?
Yeah.
And one great leverage point to get in these doors is to say, oh, we've had this level of influence over.
Makes good sense, right? You don't go blasting this thing out all over the internet and just look like you're starstruck. Instead, you use it strategically. You use it in conversation. You build trust with it. So, next logical question. What did he do with those intros? Whoop is now used by many professional sports leagues. And how did that happen?
Well, one interesting thing is that I think you got to spend a lot of time really understanding your industry.
Yeah.
I got very geeked out on collective bargaining agreements. Hmm. And I decided I was going to know the most about how leagues and players associations were negotiating around health monitoring.
Oh, interesting.
Because we're building a product that does health monitoring.
Right.
And what happened is I saw that between the NFL and the NFL Players Association, the NFLPA actually won a lot of the rights for health monitoring. And so I got interested. I said, okay, wow. If we wanted to be able to measure the recovery and the sleep of all the players in the NFL, what if we could get the NFLPA partners with us?
Yeah.
And so it turned out the NFLPA was quite smart. They created a technology competition. Mm-hmm. 300 companies applied to get the rights to use this data and to work with NFL players. And Whoop actually ended up winning that competition.
Oh, cool.
So today, Whoop is an official partner of the NFL Players Association. We're the official recovery wearable of the NFLPA. And we're being distributed to every player in the NFL, which is really cool for us. And kind of gets to your point of like, how do you go from one athlete to a bunch? And
yeah.
So now, you know, we're going to be on hopefully 1,000 or 1,500 NFL players by the end of the season.
Pretty interesting, right? I think the big takeaway here is celebrities aren't necessarily the shortcut that they seem to be. Nowhere in this episode did you hear Will ever say that his product was seen on LeBron James's body and suddenly sales spiked. Instead, every part of this was smart and strategic. You meet the influencer's influencer. You inspire your team. You open doors. You study like hell so that when you walk through those doors, you're as informed and strategic as possible. The secret to scoring with influencers, then, is to not think about the influencers as the final score at all. They're just one step. One big, visible, exciting step, yeah, but they aren't a substitute for hard work. In fact, they're the result of it. And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to Problem Solvers wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Monday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And hey, be kind. Pass the show along to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost. And did you solve a problem that would be good for this show? Let me know about it. Visit my website, jasonfeifer.com, JasonFeifer.com, where you can find my contact information and all sorts of other valuable info. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for all your entrepreneurship needs. And even better, subscribe to our magazine, which is just full of the smartest entrepreneurs solving the toughest problems. My name is Jason Feifer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. Thanks for listening. And hey, let's go solve some problems.